Meeting to order. Sorry to be a little bit late, but can't do much without a quorum, and we have it now, so.
Trustee Hill?
Present.
Trustee James?
Present.
Is the meeting notice posted as required?
Yes, they were.
Great. All right, so the first thing on our agenda actually is approval of the previous meeting minutes, which I read, and I think there's a couple areas where I don't understand what they are, so I'm going to ask you to relook at those before we approve them. Academic and Student Affairs update. Dr. Westbrooks. Good morning.
Good morning. Okay, I don't want to be redundant. I'm not sure how much Dr. Watson is going to discuss in his presentation, but of course, hearing it more than once is okay. First, I'd like to start off with giving accolades to Dr. Mario Beatty. He's the department chair for African American Studies. Recently, he was given the Carter G. Woodson Award. It was presented at the annual National Council for Black Studies. And as you know, every time, you know, we're able to give accolades to our faculty and or students, we always like to showcase that. In the Department of Chemistry and Physics, Dr. Garcia and three of our physics students will be spending 7 weeks in Geneva, Switzerland to work on a nuclear research project. You know, I have many of them, but I'm just going to gloss over some of them because they are indicated in your report. I'd like to talk a little bit about Dr. Deborah Nelson. She's in the College of Education. She was recently awarded the Dance Educator of the Year Award, and that was presented in March 18, 2010 in Springfield. A number of publications out of the College of Pharmacy, those are outlined in the report regarding campus community events and kickoffs. The College of Pharmacy has really been a team player relative to initiatives with the Wellness Center. There was a kickoff whereby the faculty engaged in performing blood pressure measurements, height and weight measurements, body mass. In addition, they did a cardiovascular risk screenings. So the faculty continue to be engaged not only with the university community, but the external community as well. The Division of Continuing Education, I was really pleased that it inducted its 36 non-traditional degree students into the Non-Traditional Degree Honors Society, which is a first for Chicago State, so I was really pleased about that. The name of the Honors Society is Alpha Sigma Lambda. Our Honors College, we have two students that I like to showcase. One, a senior in psychology, has accepted an offer. And of course, when we talk about offers, it always has monetary value. This particular one, $125,000 to attend or to participate in a doctoral program in Ed Psych. And this is at University of Iowa. So they will begin their research studies and their PhD studies in the fall of 2010. In addition, we have another senior political science major, Erica Avery. She has been accepted to 6 law schools. And again, this attests to the caliber of students that are matriculating and graduating from Chicago State University. Recently, we had, I think it was Thursday, I get my days confused, we had Faculty Appreciation Day. And this was as a result of one of the many initiatives hosted by our Center for Teaching and Research Excellence. whereby we showcased the faculty who had, it was very competitive. We had two faculty members who received $5,000 awards for their research proposals. And we had another dozen faculty who were recipients of $1,000 awards. And basically, those awards support their travel, because many of the travels do occur out of state, but it supports their travel to present their research at the various conferences. The conferences are well documented, and their names do appear in the conference proceedings. Student Affairs continues to have a host of programmed activities. The one that I'm really pleased about, I'm pleased about all of them, but the one that I'm really excited about is we now have a sexual assault video that students are required to watch. And this is all of our first-time students matriculating at Chicago State. In order for the university to be in compliance, because we did receive an audit, potential audit finding, we wanted to make certain that this was in place. So it is in place. It's been in place now for about 3 weeks already. I think we've had a couple of hundred students to already register for it. So it's all done online. It serves as a paper trail for us in the event if auditors ask, have the students participate. But more importantly, it's the content of the film. And we think that it not only serves our students well who live in the residence hall, but all of our students on campus. So we're really excited about that initiative. So basically, that's my report. If you like, I can move on to tenure recommendations.
Is there anything else on the Higher Learning Commission?
Oh. Why is it that I, how can I forget?
It's just that little thing, you know. It's I'm sure it just sort of slid by without notice.
We continue to meet each Friday. The advisory task force has now, the members of the advisory task force, not all of them, but many of them have now folded into the steering committee for our next scheduled comprehensive visit, 2012-2013. At that time, 6 months prior to the visit, we anticipate the visit may be April 2013. But prior to that visit, we must submit, it's humongous, the comprehensive self-study. And it will cover five criterion. We have criterion teams already established. In addition to those five teams, we will have three additional teams. One team will specifically address past concerns of the university. And it's important that it's full disclosure and we are transparent. That way, there are no surprises for the team. And we will be able to talk about, yes, these were the concerns, but this is how we've addressed those concerns, including the last focus team report, last focus team visit. We will also have a criterion team that will specifically be responsible for helping us put the self-study together, because the self-study, just like the focus team visit, everything was done electronically. The team wants to see a virtual exhibit room in addition to a printed document room. So we will have two rooms. One we've called the war room, and that's typical for most visits. I had the pleasure of participating in the HLC conference that was held in April. We had approximately 9 faculty members to participate, and all of the deans participated as well. It was, also a staff member in the office for the provost. But it was a wealth of information. We walked away with a lot of resources. In addition, Dr. Karen Solomon, she's the vice president for HLC. We had a chance to talk with her. She serves as the technical consultant for Chicago State University. All universities have a technical consultant, and we're fortunate to have Karen to work with us. She's scheduled to come on campus September 23rd, which is a Thursday, to do our campus kickoff. But our kickoff really started the day after we had our exit visit for the focus team report and visit. But because we will continue to meet, we have lots to do. Dr. Watson will probably share with you. We're really a year behind. There's no way we can capture that, so we will be on a fast pace moving ahead, because the self-study involves the entire university, including the trustees. So I'm hoping that you will be able to clear your calendars, because when Karen Solomon comes on campus, she will probably want to spend just a couple of minutes with as many of the trustees who may be available, and so that we make certain that we are moving expeditiously for a successful visit. So that's where we are with accreditation and HLC, and I'm really pleased. We have two faculty members that are spearheading the focus, not the focus, but the comprehensive visit. The faculty members are Dr. Paul Musial. He is, as a matter of fact, the both of them promised that they will be here this afternoon for the board meeting, because I wanted them to meet you personally. But Dr. Paul Musial, he's an associate professor in mathematics. And Dr. Gabe Mulageta, he is a full professor in geography. So they've stepped up to the plate. Very organized. I'm really pleased with the progress. And we have similar traits. They're workaholics, and I really like that, because they're moving the teams forward. So we will be working throughout the summer, with the exception of maybe a day or two for vacation. But we're excited, and we're optimistic that it will be a successful visit.
Well, it's always about the process. It's about examining where we are and what we do well and what we don't do as well, and
exactly.
How we're going to move forward on some of those things. So it's not just about getting to the goal. It's as important as that is, but I think it's also about really taking advantage of this process to reflect on the university itself.
I agree.
Great. Anything you want to ask?
No, this one.
Okay. I also want to just say congratulations to all those faculty members and their achievements, because I think they are, and I'm always impressed to hear about them, because you can sometimes forget all of that work that goes on and the recognition that they're able to get among their peers and their field. So
thank you.
I hope you will convey that from the board. All right, should we do tenure?
Okay, as indicated, I have five faculty members, all from the College of Arts and Sciences. I'm not sure in terms of protocol, do you want me to give you the names of the individuals?
Yeah.
Okay, we have Dr. Eddie Gayton. He's the Assistant Professor of Foreign Languages from the Department of Foreign Languages and Literature. He's going up for consideration for tenure, along with the other four: Ms. Artesia Green, Associate Professor of Theater in the Department of English, Communications, Media, and Theater. Dr. Lionel Kimball, Jr., he's an Associate Professor of History in the Department of History, Philosophy, and Political Science. Dr. Christy Martis, Associate Professor of Chemistry, the Department of Chemistry and Physics. And Dr. Asare Nanza, Assistant Professor of Chemistry, Department of Chemistry and Physics. All have met the requisite standards and criteria for teaching, research, and service, and warrant consideration for tenure.
Great. And these individuals have been recommended for tenure by the president, so.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
In which case, I would entertain a motion to recommend to the board that these individuals be granted tenure.
I move that we recommend these individuals that's listed for tenure.
Yeah, you know what?
You can't do that.
We're going to have to wait just 60 seconds. Because technically, the student trustee cannot.
Hold on, Tim.
Right.
Yeah.
Vote on this matter, exactly.
That's exactly right.
Just a tiny bit of conflict of interest.
Yeah. Well, that's why the statute was written the way it was. Not to put you in that position and not to put the faculty in that position. So we will just wait for Dr. Finney to join us, and then we will.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, good morning.
Good morning.
The committee has been presented with the names of five individuals who are being recommended for tenure. They have all apparently met the requirements for teaching scholarship and service, and have been through the process that we go through, and have been recommended by the president. And they are Dr. Eddie Gayton, Ms. Artesia Green, Dr. Lionel Kimball Jr., Dr. Christy Martis, and Dr. Asarain Kansa, something like that, anyway, N-K-A-N-S-A-H. And so we need a motion to recommend to the board that these individuals be granted tenure.
I reviewed the names, and I move that those, all five names be submitted for approval.
Second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Finney?
Yes.
Great. Okay. Is there anything else that you wanted to share with us?
No, we're moving ahead.
That's good.
No, we're excited.
Moving backwards is never good.
We're excited.
Yeah, that's good. Great. Thank you very much. Enrollment and retention update. Mr. Bell? Oh, I'm just glad I brought the right computer. I have two, and one of them is a Sony.
It's a Sony.
Thank you. I wanted to provide an update generally and give you some sense of our major focus on building this new architecture around enrollment management. And what we have worked to do is to look for related goals and activities, overlapping service populations, and then to bring those units under senior leadership to get them to articulate much better, to reduce duplication, and to create more synergy across the departments. So the cluster on the far right is headed by Dr. Patricia George, who has had great success at the university working with grant-funded programs, the TRIO programs, academic support services, and a very broad portfolio of student support units. We have wedded with that cluster financial aid, admission, and the registrar in academic evaluation. So it's a large portfolio, but really focused on not only the entry, the recruitment and financing of students, but also a large portfolio of servicing students as well, and intervention and supporting them through their studies and activities at the university. The center column is led by Dr. Cheryl Green, who is the dean for freshman experience and has focused primarily successfully on coordinating academic support services, guidance and counseling, and really looking at our academic performance of our students and providing appropriate interventions in a way that we have heretofore not done. And I'd like to focus on that a little bit rather than spend more time on this organizational chart, but to really give you a feel for the interventions and successes that we're having in retaining our students. And in summary, just the kind of the hallmark of what we try to do is connect these organizations, move to more data-driven decision-making and examination of what is going on so that we can then develop sound changes in operation and policy recommendations. Retention has been our number one focus this spring, and we have seen some real improvements under Dr. Green's leadership. We have coordinated activities across multiple departments. We have physically and actively intervened in reaching out to students in person, by telephone, by social networking sites, by mail. And what we have seen is the fruit of that effort is an 83% record retention or continuation rate, really, from the fall, first-time freshman, to springtime. We've also partnered with...
Do we know what it was in the past?
This is the highest previously was around 79%, 78, 79%. So we've seen an increase moving us to a new level, which hopefully we can beat in the future. But this is a result of partnerships across academic support services, University College, the University Advising Center, and the Effective Study Program. And these efforts, as I mentioned, included a number of different ways of reaching out to students, from traditional mail to using social networking sites. One of the pluses for us is we're building momentum in reaching out to the students. And this first note speaks to academic workshops. When we started our effort in the Effective Study Program, which is connected with the counseling department, we had 20 students attend, and later in the term in the spring, we were able to increase that to serve 80 students. University College Coordinator Candy Bennett actually spoke with 85% of the students who had academic warnings, and that was through telephone conversations or in-person visits in the office. We've coordinated activity across with the college deans because they have efforts as well, and they have staff that are reaching out to students. So we have shared information and developed some new insights. And I want to share one with you that I think is particularly telling for us, and it helps us evaluate the effectiveness of some of our efforts. We had 158 first-time, full-time freshman on academic probation in the spring. That was just approximately 27%, 26.8%. One of the things that we noted is that 73 students who were in University College were on academic probation. So when we separate those populations, the percentage of regularly admitted students and the University College students that were on academic probation in the spring was very close to the same. All students regularly admitted was 26.8%, and in the University College population, it was 25.7%. Very good information that endorses, seems to endorse the effectiveness of some of the summer workshops. That was underscored as we've drilled down and followed students now going from academic warning to actually academic probation. And we zeroed in on the University College program, and let me reiterate, University College students do not meet the normal admission criteria. So they're admitted by exception. We have summer workshops to intervene to prepare them for their regular courses. And when we looked at those University College students who were on academic probation, there were 66 that did not participate in the summer workshops. 90% of those students who didn't participate in the workshop were on academic probation.
Say that again, please.
90% of the
University
College students who did not attend the summer workshops
found themselves on academic pro
in the spring.
I remember last year when I was speaking with the individual from the Office of Examinations, he informed me that funding was one of the chief reasons why there weren't more summer workshops and summer bridge programs available in the summer. Is that still an issue? And if so, what is it that we can do to help, you know, change that?
I think our greater challenge, and last year we hit record numbers. Mm-hmm. So the baseline funding was not a match for the increase in participation. I think, yes, we may need to modulate our funding, but our larger challenge is to actually get students to participate in this effort to help them succeed. When we're looking at patterns that say there is effectiveness in this effort, and those students who need the support and don't participate may have a short career as Chicago State University students. That's clearly not what any of us want for those students. So I think what we're really looking at, in addition to funding, is what are our options for offering a second set of workshops for late admits just before the fall term starts, rather than in the summer in a normal track, so that we can improve the throughput. That's clearly going to have budgetary implications, and we will do our best to present those as we're it's a moving train at this point going forward.
And I don't know if this is already done, but is it possible to link, I mean, just to help with whatever budgetary concerns there might be, is it possible to link some of the money that we use, I mean, that we receive for the developmental courses to actually pay for the summer bridge program? So no, it's not possible.
We don't get money.
I know we don't receive any. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were charging the students for those courses. Okay, never mind. I stand corrected.
Right. So the students aren't charged for the courses during the summer.
No, I'm not talking about for the summer. I'm talking about during the fall and the spring. So the students who end up taking 0990,
right.
Yeah, would they be allowed to, I mean, is there some way that we can actually have that funding?
Well, thanks to the president's intervention this year, during the intersection between fall and spring, mm-hmm. the president offered us some support to actually allow students to take those, to retake the 099 math, which mm-hmm. seems to be the challenge. And we were able to develop a class during the intersession to actually put some students back on track. We're going to, now that we have enough data, we'll be looking to not only do the intersession, but we're looking at actually, had some preliminary conversations with the president about doing this before the fall, mm-hmm. in the summer. One of our challenges, these students that didn't participate, they came into the university college or were admitted late. The program was over. So rather than say we can't take them, we don't want to offer them enrollment, it's let's look at what our other options are to do something at the right time before they move into their regular registration cycle.
What happened this fall that we identified about 121 students who had not passed their math. And then we're estimating there would be another X number of students who would not pass that math course this spring. Mm-hmm. So we offered that class in the intersession. And I must add, research shows that students who drop out, most of them are dropping out down the road because they ultimately did not pass that math course. That math is really a keystone to helping to ensure that our students are going to be successfully retained and they are successfully matriculate through the university. So this summer, we're talking about, we are identifying, we're contacting all 100 students in the fall and all students in the spring who will flunk that math course. And we're going to offer that course to them at no charge. At no charge. We are looking in to make sure that we don't have any problems with regards to state policy, board policy, and et cetera. But somehow, some way, we must figure out how we get around those policies and that legislation to ensure that these students are given a very focused and immersed educational experience in math. We firmly believe that if they pass that math course, that will really increase their chances of being retained significantly. But we're trying to figure out how we do it at no charge. We will pay the faculty, but we have to figure out how we can do that at no charge. And that run into some other challenges.
Let me underscore the president's comments. When we looked at the first time full-time enrolling freshmen of any admit type, we had 21% of the students that failed this 099 math. Hmm. So it is a challenge. It is a gateway course building potential for success. So it is something we have good information on. And it's allowing us to then really tackle this problem. Solutions are still in the works, but we have it clearly in the crosshairs of our efforts. And just go back here.
Could I just interject one
yes,
thing? Because I see Ms. Romy Lowe here. And one of the things that I would like to know for the board is that I met with her, I believe it was in the late winter of 2009. And during that time, she observed that one of the challenges that we have around enrollment, but in particular retention, is the absence of this sort of clustered management matrix that you have presented. And I think that what she said, and I want to quote her accurately, she could nod her head or not. She said, you know, we're operating in silos.
Yes.
That was her term. And in that instance, meaning that we were so confined on administrative staff in little pigeonholes that we were not interfacing, and thereby many of the efforts that we wanted to achieve as it relates to improved performance didn't happen. So I think that I'm glad to see that at this particular moment we have the sort of clustered away and the intercommunication that we have now, and obviously the return of and the benefit is to improve the department, improve performance. Am I correct?
Yes.
And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to add that Romy Lowe did play a key role in terms of providing the input that she gave you back then. She gave us that input that helped us to formulate this policy, along with Dr. Green, along with Dr. George. I mean, it was a team of individuals, but Romy did play a very key role. Insurance continuing, as I call it, legacy information, her legacy of knowledge of the institution.
We still have goals to get more integrated or articulated and regularize that process beyond our first efforts later during the year. We're not quite where we want to be yet, but we know we're on the right path. Some of the counseling center activity just shows in terms of their coordinated activities with the Learning Assistance Center, African American Male Resource Center, Career Development has increased their traffic during the year in every aspect of their operation. In undergraduate admissions, as you probably know from earlier reports, we continue to be slightly behind last year. We have taken some interventions. We purchased just over 6,000 names from the American College Testing Program that we have reached out to through email to try and generate some additional interest and application flow. We based that purchase on our historical enrollment patterns around the state and purchased names of students from 27 Illinois counties and the 5 Northwest Indiana counties to generate additional applications. We have also developed email communication to current applicants that are already in our system, underscoring timely application for student financial aid. Speaking of which, I'd like to, wrong button, sorry about that. To call your attention to some significant financial aid developments this year. The federal government's approach to education loans is changing fundamentally. Banks will no longer be the source and the process of student loans. Universities and colleges will be that will reduce fees and costs to students. Hopefully we have a better relationship with our enrolled students than do the bankers. So both the undergraduate, the financial aid office and the business office are working to assure that we're ready for this transition later in the summer. One of the other significant changes that will help a lot of our students this year is a change or modification in the Pell Grant program under the heading of what's called year-round Pell. It was a little known legislative or regulatory change to the program that happened in the last days of the previous administration under President Bush. What it allows students to do is to essentially merge their access to funds over a 2 academic year period and use those funds, fully have the same access to them, and allow them to use the regular academic year, the summer sessions, and connect to the then subsequent academic year to reduce interruptions in their study and accelerate graduation. So we're really excited about this. It significantly increases the amount of money that students have access to compared to the previous program, which prorated in a pretty narrow way the academic funding available to the student, and in the summer session it was much smaller monies available to them than we will have going forward. And actually we've already begun communicating to the student body about the access to these new funds for the summer session. Lastly, we are in the final stages of developing a consortium agreement to coordinate federal financial aid with Kennedy King College, Chicago Community College, and Chicago State in terms of a new dual enrollment effort where we hope to provide an additional regular stream of enrollment for Chicago State through this process. In the marketing area, thanks to you, we have been working with a new communication and marketing firm, Jaskula and Terman Associates. We have been working with them in the early stages of refining and developing our media strategy, new creative materials for us to fulfill some of our prior commitments to place advertising in newspapers and other publications. So they're working with us on that. They're also developing a public speaking workshop series for senior staff and are helping us to develop strategic positioning and messaging for promoting undergraduate and graduate programs going forward. So we are seeing some benefits from that relationship. Currently, most recent project was just developing the cover for the alumni events in merely a few weeks. So we did that the end of this past week. So let me stop there and respond to any questions that you might have.
Just one quick question. The public speaking workshops for senior staff, is that to ensure that all of our senior staff are capable of being spokespersons for the university?
Yes, to improve the abilities to respond to open public forums, news interviews, and the like. And the president is leading the way, actually. Not that he needs any help from the way he wowed the some Chicago public school principals and counselors last week here in the library.
You know, it's our attempt to try to address some media challenges that we have, and trying to get a positive image out to the public, because we've had some challenges over the years that will not in any way control those individuals who we do not control. Those individuals who you know, we still have individuals who are who have the intent of hurting the university by saying whatever they can, when they can, that is negative about the university. It will not thwart that.
Thank you.
What, do you have any speculation at this point about the reason that applications are down?
Well, there we have, as the president has implied, we've had some hits in the media over this past year or so in terms of accreditation. We have clearly taken a stance to counter that. We've increased our promotional activities in the newspaper, and also we have some downsides in terms of just the general economy. that are depressing, even at public institutions, enrollment currently. So we're not immune to the larger environment in terms of loss of jobs and resources, even for students who we can provide full access to federal funds.
Any other questions?
Just a small one about our brand message. Do we currently have one? And if not, is that currently under development?
We're working to refine and to have a solid positioning message. We're using something inspired by the president as much as possible, and I will let him speak to that.
In answer to your question, and also the previous question as to why we have a slight, why we do not have as healthy of an enrollment applications as it stands right now. We are still suffering under what has happened over the last year or two at the university in terms of PR. And let me give you an example. I just talked with the provost. We have a student, and I will not name the high school. It is a very prominent high school in this city. And when we hit our next intermission, the provost and I are going to call the principal of that high school. The student wants to come to Chicago State. The high school has refused to give the transcripts to that student to go to Chicago State, because they do not believe that Chicago State is appropriate for that student. So we have an image to change. Now, I'm going to deal with the principal and let the principal know that there's some, that he is putting his high school in serious danger right now by taking that kind of stance. But the reality is that we have that kind of a challenge. We must change that image. And we're gonna do it one student at a time, one staff member, one administrator, one faculty at a time, in terms of getting out the correct image of what we are doing. This university is just a fantastic university. But we have, we've had some individuals who have, hurt this university, and we are reversing that. So that's an example of what we are fighting. You heard Andre talk about, I met with all of the principals. And when I met with the principal, the first two questions that they were asking were the things dealing with our image. These are CVS, this is High Park High School. And we addressed it. And we believe we were able to make them feel comfortable that we have things in control. And our accreditation is solid. That our student base is very supportive. And that our faculty are among the best faculty in Chicago. And we just have to continue delivering that message. It's called time on task. And we just have to be consistently putting it out there.
You know, there's two things to that point that you just made. One, it reminds me of my recent interview this past Friday, where I went to for an internship with the Sixth Ward Alderman, Alderman Lyle. And while I was there and being interviewed, one of the questions that they asked me was about the Mata Booty situation. And I was shocked. Well, I shouldn't have been, but I was shocked because I thought that for the most part, that issue was pretty much just something that was, that it was not a major community concern. And then seeing that that's one of my interview questions before I actually come in, it definitely kind of shocked me, well, awoken me to the knowledge that this is a community issue and that we do have to do better. Well, I don't know how we could do much better than what we've been doing, because the work on PR on that issue was heavy. But the second portion was
the faculty component. My younger sister, she attends Roosevelt University here in Chicago. And she's a, to put it into context, she's a female student, of course, who has a child, a newborn, about 6 months old right now. And the university is very, although it's a very good school, they have a bad habit of not taking care of financial aid properly and doing various things like that and not really understanding their non-traditional students. And when my sister was doing her homework, she was struggling because the faculty member that she had was not able to develop her skills so that she could properly do the work. So I was doing my homework for my business law course, and I was just zooming through it, you know, and I was, you know, the professor had my name and other classmates' names inside of the case studies, you know, to make it a little bit more of a connection between us. And she was just like, man, my school doesn't do anything close to that. And the faculty members do not even, are not nearly as invested. And through that, she decided, okay, I'm gonna go ahead. First, she was kind of iffy about transferring to Chicago State. She put in an application, but now she's firmly behind it because of the things like I mentioned earlier with our solving of our issues of financial aid, and then our solving, well, not necessarily solving, but our talented faculty that are able to educate and bring us to a point where we can succeed.
Yes, yes.
So
That message has to be gotten out there more and more and more. I mean, our financial aid, you use financial aid as an example, you know, our financial aid office, you know, has really just turned on a dime.
Yeah.
The customer service comments that I'm hearing, you know, are very positive. We can always do better in all of our departments, in all of our departments. But I believe that the different departments, that they are grabbing hold to the fact that customer service is directly related to retention of our students. There's a direct correlation to retention of students and customer service. And I think we've gotten that across, and I think that the different staff members and our civil service staff members have started taking ownership of it. And that's what's important, that they started taking ownership.
Any other comments or questions? Hearing none, then we'll move it. Thank you, Mr. Bell. Appreciate it. Now, public and employee comments. Do we have any public or employee comments today?
Okay. Good morning. For the record, Philip Beverly, HPPS. I'm glad to hear Mr. Bell talk about data-driven decision-making. And that's outstanding from a social scientist perspective. I would advise some caution, however, about causality, just from a research design perspective. The presence of a factor doesn't make it causal. And so that we say we've done A, B, C, and D, and that's why this has happened, it puts us on thin ice sort of in a methodological way. So I'd advise some caution there. I know from some faculty that I've talked to, there's still some confusion around retention in terms of the groups that we're talking about. Is the focus on first-time, full-time freshmen or everybody, and who are we trying to retain, because the numbers game that we need to play because of the Department of Education is around first-time, full-time freshmen. And what we're having a, sort of at the ground level, and I know sort of administrators flying at 35,000 feet don't deal with the ground level like we do, who are the people that were the students that we're talking about? Because if we could get them, and this is said half in jest, so don't take this completely seriously, if we could tag them and be able to say, oh yeah, that one, that one, that one, we gotta really keep eyes on those three out of these 15 that we might have in a class, that might be really helpful for us to you know, keep our hands on because of their importance. All of my students are important, I get that, and we have to play the retention game the way we have to play it. And so it would be so much easier for us to know who our first-time, full-time freshmen are. The other thing, I think I mentioned this at a prior board meeting, is about using our lobbying. I'm going to bang this horse again, this drum again, using our lobbying in D.C. to try and change the criteria from the Department of Education, because we're getting treated the same way that a University of Michigan gets treated. And we are so different from a university like that in so many ways that the strengths of our university don't get to come to the fore. And I think that that hurts us. I heard some dialogue about the dual enrollment scheme with Kennedy King College, and I know that for faculty there are some unanswered questions how the students count in terms of enrollment. Are we getting first-time, full-time freshmen or not? There's just some lack of clarity there. And whose admissions criteria will be used? And when will the details of the plan be communicated sort of downward to the lower levels? And lastly, talking about the downward trend that we have in applications, I saw this piece in the Sun-Times yesterday about the University of Chicago and their applications being up this year by like 2,000 or something like that. Now, granted, U of C is a selective enrollment university. Of course, their retention's in the 90% because they are selective enrollment, and we know all that. But the thing that struck me was a comment by a high school student from Lansing who was asked, so why'd you choose U of C? And she said, it was the presentation they made at my high school. And I thought, oh, isn't that interesting? And then she went on to speak about the essay question that was asked in the application process. And I thought, we don't do that, do we? And just maybe something to look at the selective enrollment universities and see what we can sort of steal from them, or you know, borrow from them and use for our enrollment. Thank you.
Thank you. We're reading those issues in a similar fashion, particularly for our higher risk students.
You're going to need to, if you're going to come back in the comment, then you have to come back and present. Okay. Otherwise, you might want to just talk to him after the meeting.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, with regard to some of the comments, we are. As educators, we're concerned about all students. We're not concerned about just first-time, full-time freshmen. So our retention goal is for all students, period. Graduate students and undergraduate students. Now, with regards to the first-time, full-time freshmen, that is something that we must identify because we're part of the HLC, and we are on a dual track, parallel track, concerned about the first-time, full-time freshmen. They are not exclusive. And our efforts are to develop programs to ensure that we retain all students, and then we have a focus on first-time, full-time freshmen, and thank God for Dr. Green. We are putting that focus there with Dr. Green's team's effort. With regards to administrators being at a 30,000-foot level, Chicago State, the administrative team is right on the ground with the students in terms of analyzing and understanding what is happening with the students, the faculty, and the staff. And there is a very comprehensive effort that is taking place that is involving faculty, chairpersons, deans from all levels across all disciplines, breaking through silos and addressing the whole question of retention. With regards to the dual admissions with Kennedy King College, that is a work in progress, and that work in progress is taking place with faculty, chairpersons, and deans, and all of the above on such an intricate articulation agreement is being worked out by them, with them, and around them, and it is a work in progress. And that is being rolled out by deans to their departments as we do it. Ultimately, we have to bring it to this board. We hope to bring it to the board at the June board meeting. And Kennedy King College has to bring it to its board because it is a very comprehensive contract, or not contract, articulation agreement. Once again, the foundation of it is being worked out by faculty and by the chairs of the different departments. And that's basically.
Is there?
Well, we are also doing a major effort. What we're doing with Kennedy King, we're in the process of trying to work out a similar effort with the Chicago Public Schools now. We've been meeting with a number of individuals there and trying to set up a very, you might say, a partnership with Chicago Public Schools that will be much more comprehensive than anything we've ever done before. And let me say, I've seen some of the stuff that Romy has done, and it has been really, really great. I mean, Romy has pulled together some great things with Chicago Public Schools, and we're going to build on that. You know, we're going to build on that and tie in there some program articulation so that the articulation part is much tighter between, you know, with our math and our English and et cetera.
I have just one small question, and it relates to the classroom rosters that the faculty members receive. I've never seen one, but I do know that they do have our 9,000 numbers as well as our names. On that roster, does it also include what the student's classification is, where it says junior, senior, sophomore, freshman? Is it possible to get that material on there, and then for our first time, full-time freshman, put one F or something on it to identify? Okay. How soon would it be?
It's not part of the standard banner program. It would be part of programming, but I can talk to C. Cole and mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think that it would be too hard, because when you're doing banner, all you're really doing is having queries, and then you're saying what things we want. So
programming is always the something. But I think that my understanding is that the efforts in the programs to identify students who are falling behind in classes would apply to